Hi, this is Jen Zaman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Brown Eel. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. On today's edition, host Richard Tripp will talk with State Representative Brandon Ellington about the Voices of the People Community Thanksgiving Dinner and let you know about other sharing events. Then, in the second half of the show, another edition of Recovery Talk with Liz Henry. She will talk with Stacey Bush about what it is like to be a young person in recovery. Have your pens and paper ready for our calendar of events in the middle of the show and the 420 Drug War news at the end of the show. Up next is Richard and Brandon.
Good morning. This is Richard Tripp again with Jaws of Justice. I have with me today Representative Brandon Ellington. Good morning, Brandon.
Now, how you doing today, Rich?
Pretty good. I want to talk about this great work you're doing. I understand you're going to feed a bunch of people.
Yeah, no, it's all God. Last week, we had a charity game. This week, the dinner will be at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Brush Creek, and it starts at 4 to 7.
How many years you been doing this now?
Personally, as a state rep, I've been doing it for the last 3 years, but Voices of the People has been doing it for the last 8. So what I did once I got elected, I just combined the community work I was doing with Voices of the People with my office to help it expand and help it grow. So this would be our 8th year feeding the homeless.
Well, you get all the time. I mean, I've seen you. You run around like, you know, like mad. Where you get all that time to do all this good?
Again, it would be all God. I just got back from St. Louis, so I'm constantly moving. When we talk about access and helping out those that are needy, this is something that I believe that we have to do. And as elected official, again, we have so much access to resources. I feel it's my moral obligation to make sure I'm doing everything that I can to help those that need help the most.
Yeah, I love the way you think. You know, I've been doing, I do an event, mm-hmm. the COP events, and for the last 30 years, up until this year, we've been holding 2 events a year. Unfortunately, due to my health right now, I'm not able to do my event that would actually be this Saturday. So what I'm doing, I'm combining in the clothes that we get in with you with Voices of the People, and you're going to give them away on the...
The clothes giveaway will be December the 11th at Brush Creek Community Center. We partner with Brush Creek Community Center. They have a Christmas event that they do, that they've been doing yearly. One of the negatives that they have is they only have the ability to give away 1 toy per child. So what we try to do is come in, give away more toys to kids. Obviously, we have clothes packages and allow people to come in and get coats, clothes, and whatever canned goods that we have left over from the charity dinner. The Thanksgiving dinner, we give those away, too. And last year and the year before, and I believe the year before that, we partnered together, too, Rich. Richard is extremely humble, but he's somebody that's extremely committed to taking care of those that need help, too.
What do you need for your dinner tomorrow or Thursday?
We're still accepting canned goods. Obviously, we've been accepting canned goods all the way up to the day of the dinner. We're also accepting clothes, coats, kids' toys. So if you have any of those, please feel free to drop them off at Brush Creek Community Center. You do not have to wait on me to be there. Y'all can actually start dropping stuff off today. And again, everything that we receive will be redistributed to the community December the 11th at Brush Creek and Voices of the People annual Christmas event, Winter Wonderland.
I think it's going to be fun. A lot of kids there. You know, one thing I'd like to say to the public is after doing mine for 30 years, there's no feeling in the world like being able to hand something to them kids that you know they'll get on Christmas. And, you know, just the ordinary people that we hand coats and blankets and whatever people want to bring us in, when you stand there and you hand that to somebody that you know really needs it, they don't have to thank you because they're thanking you with their eyes, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing a service to the public, and believe me, you may not know it at the time, but they appreciate it. They appreciate the heck out of it.
I know it's extremely gratifying feeling. 2 things I do want to articulate just to make sure I'm clear. With Brush Creek's portion of the event on December the 11th, People have to pre-register for Brush Creek's part. With Voices of the People's part, we don't require pre-registration. So anybody that shows up, we will try to take care of them to the best of our ability as far as giving them clothes and giving them kids toys. With Brush Creek's portion, the children have to be 15 and under, and they require pre-registration. With the community dinner, not only is it for those that are homeless, but it's for those in the community that are lonely, and it goes back to what you were just saying. When you have an event and you can bring people together and you don't make people feel like they're secondary, you actually make everything inclusive. The type of gratification that you get from helping people out and seeing people, seeing the smiles on people's faces is unimaginable.
Yeah, and that dinner is on Wednesday, right?
Yes, it's this Wednesday, November the 26th, 4 to 7 p.m.
Okay, I also wanted to let the public know, if any of you know of a place giving dinner or giving away clothes, call us at 816-931-5534. Our phone screener will take the info down and give it to us, and we'll get it up on both the web pages, the radio's web page and the cop web page. Mm-hmm. And I imagine if I know your mother on your web page.
Yeah, now she's out promoting it. She's promoting it heavy.
Yeah, you got a heck of a promoter there. Good lady.
And by her being my mother, I really don't have to pay her. So that's a good thing.
But it's really important that people would let us know if you do know of somewhere having a dinner or giving out clothes. Let us know, because, you know, we're in touch with a lot of the poor and the homeless. And although we give this stuff away on December
the
11th, although we do that, we still, at least I do, I go around during the wintertime and I give out clothes to those on the street that ain't got them, that can't get them for some reason. And we make sure they get them. One thing I'd like to say, the one problem I've had in 30 years has always been storage. And
yeah.
I imagine you have that same problem.
Well, we actually been blessed, because going back to what you said, typically we make sure that we like to see it go to people's hands. So during a Thanksgiving dinner, not only do we have the capability that we take food to people's families that are sitting at the houses to make sure people that can't come out, they get meals. It's the same thing with the Christmas giveaway, the Winter Wonderland. We actively take packages of clothes to people that we know are under bridges, people that we know that are in homeless camps. I'm not talking about the Salvation Army or major facilities. We like to give the resources that we get directly to people. With the Winter Wonderland event on December 11th, it's open to the public. We allow people to come in. We do have to take people's names just for safety purposes to make sure we're covered with what we do. But we directly give stuff to the people. And I think that's one of the things that concerns people when they talk about charity events and charity giveaways. More often than not, it goes to large corporations in this warehouse. Well, ours does not. Ours go directly to the people. You can touch them, see their faces, et cetera.
Well, one of my purposes when I started COP was to make sure that if somebody gave me something for the poor, that it was going to go straight to the poor. It wasn't going to go to a thrift store.
Yeah.
Now, I understand why these organizations set up stuff to sell stuff, you know, to raise money. But to me, God told me, if I give it to you to give out, you better give it out.
No, I agree with you 100%.
And, you know, I get a little worried about that.
No, I agree with you 100%. I'm very hesitant with some of the organizations that I partner with for what you just said. I don't believe in taking people resources that they gave away free, and then you turn around and create or make a profit off of it, and the auspices of the name are doing good. For the charity event where we originally collect all the canned goods, the frozen turkeys, et cetera, there's no monetary amount to come in. We charge for canned goods, we charge a frozen turkey, or coats and used clothes. Because, again, the objective of Voices of the People and my objective is not to charge anybody for anything. We're actually just trying to provide a service and help folks out. That's why we do the free community dinner. That way we guarantee that people come in and they have a hot meal. That's why we do the free clothes giveaway during the Winter Wonderland, because we want to guarantee that people have access to coats, gloves, hats, et cetera. And the reason that we partnered and started receiving children toys, again, going back to the original capabilities of Brush Creek Community Center, they can only give away one toy per child. Well, I remember when I was a kid, I wanted more than one toys. And we don't have the capability of giving kids 100 toys, but we try to help parents out with as much resources as we have. That way their children can have a happy holidays and they don't feel like they're secondary or that they left out.
Well, I know that I've give kids toys that have come in used.
Yeah.
But they've been just like new. And you know, to that kid, it don't matter if that toy's been used. How many people out there has got them their bed full of stuffed toys and they're 60 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Think what that would do to some little girl or some little boy. It would change a lot of things.
I know, it's crazy. Last year, I remember kids coming, because it's two segments in Brush Creek. So I remember kids coming in there where we had our stuff set up, and they were just sitting on the ground playing with old school cars, playing with robots and things of that nature, but they was happy. And again, these weren't $150 toys, but these are still toys that make kids happy. I think we didn't got too materialistic as citizens, as Americans, and we think that a dollar amount brings happiness. A dollar amount does not bring happiness. Connectivity brings happiness. So just being able to give a kid a stuffed animal or a toy car or an action figure or a doll, when we talk about our young girls, it goes a long way.
I think that my main problem over the years, I had that problem this year too, is you are lucky enough to get the center out there to do your events. I've always had to try to find my own event spaces downtown. And our town is literally, you can't find a space to do an event anymore.
Well, see, that goes back to what I was talking about, a moral obligation. As an elected official, it's extremely easy for us to get access to various buildings, state buildings, community centers, to partner with organizations to be able to utilize a space. Not actively seek people out. Like when I first met you, I could tell that you were somebody that had a pure heart, and that your objective was to help out people that was homeless. No ifs, ands, or buts. I remember one of the first things that you said to me that is the charities that you choose to give stuff to. You research them to make sure they don't resell items. So I would tell people to utilize your elected officials, utilize your community leaders. Because we have access to resources and we can definitely help out. Me, I try to bend over backwards to make sure we're getting things going in a positive manner, because, again, I have access. If I was in an office, it would be hard for me to get Brush Creek Community Center or for me to get some of the parks or some of the facilities. And I know it would be a little harder for me to get the donations. But, again, the donations we receive come from the charity game. And then the community dinner that we've been doing, with Voices of the People, we've been doing it over 8 years, but since I've been in office, it has actually allowed us to expand, because I can use my stature by being an elected official to get facilities and help distribute our resources.
I just want to put out there, we just got a call in, the Center of Grace Church, I believe it is, at 5202 Harrison in Olathe, Kansas. They give out free clothing to all and community dinners every Wednesday and Thursday.
Now, see, I did not know that.
Well, I did not know that. See, that's what this radio's for.
And if
it lets us know that.
Yeah, and if I could, to the church, whoever just called in, if you email me at brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov, I have a weekly newsletter. It's electronic, but I have a weekly newsletter that I put out. And in the back of it, I have a community section with community news in there. If you send me a flyer and the subject line just put add to newsletter, I have no problem putting that in there.
Oh, I forgot. The phone number is 913-764-1353. Again, every Wednesday and Thursday, they're feeding the community dinner and giving out clothes. You know, there's a lot of churches in this town that never get recognition, that gives out this type of material. And I'm not talking about your big conglomerate churches. I'm talking about the little church on the corner in the ghetto.
Yeah.
And they they give out stuff. So, you know, we all get tired of stuff we're wearing and we buy new stuff. And I believe that we should all get more involved because these are our brothers and sisters. And I don't care what color, creed, race, whatever. Hey, we all came from the same place. That's the way I feel about it. You know, people look at me and they say, what are you doing with them black people? Mm-hmm. I said, sir, my grandson happens to be black. You got a problem with that? You know, they're people.
Yeah.
They're, well, you know, I don't care who they are. If I see somebody hurting out there.
But see, that goes back to the foundation of ideology now. Because when we talk about capitalism and we talk about colonization, these are critical. It's critical to be able to colonize people by ethnicity and by social status. Once you can separate them by ethnicity and social status, now we have the form of control, which goes back into capitalism because somebody has to be doing better than somebody else, or it's called socialism. So when we talk about people that are homeless, we like to marginalize them and say, well, you know, they're homeless because they choose to be homeless. But it only takes 3 missed rent payments to be homeless. It only takes 3 mortgage payments that you cannot pay to be homeless. It only takes 3 car payments to lose your car. So to be homeless, everybody is pretty much a step away. In particular, when we look at people's savings and how much they have in their accounts, a lot of people don't have enough money where they can lose their job and be okay for a year or two. A lot of people, when they lose their job, they're on the verge of being homeless. And if they can't find anything immediately, they are homeless. The same when we talk about the social economic status or the separation of the so-called races, because race is a social construct. Ethnicity is a biological fact. But when we look at different areas, we say, go ahead.
I just look at people being people.
Yeah, now that's what people are.
I don't want to get into it, but to me, color ain't got nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know? Because I've been called the N-word so many times, I forget what that is. But anyway, I wanted to get our phone number here at the station out to people. It's area code 816-931-5534. If you'd like to call in, if you know of a church or any organization feeding their clothing in the next week or two, please call us so we can get it on our websites. And back to Brandon. My buddy. So, how many turkeys you think you go through?
Last year we cooked. I didn't cook, but last year they cooked over 20 some odd turkeys. I know I got to drop some turkeys out today. We have a gentleman. That I don't know if I can say his company because I don't want to get him in trouble. But we have a couple of gentlemen that are helping us out cook turkeys at restaurants. So they actually be having a variety of some deep fried. Some roasted, I don't do the cooking.
Now so I'm getting hungry.
So I'm a little lost with the cooking. But we should have somewhere close to the capacity that we had last year. And last year we had the ability to feed over 2,500 people that actually showed up at the center because we have a rotating dinner that goes on. And we also had a capacity of directly delivering dinners to people in community centers, people up underneath bridges, people in elderly centers. We expect to be able to do the same. But again, all credit goes back to the community because the resources that we receive comes directly from the community. None of the turkeys have came from large corporations at all or large churches at all. Everything that we received came from people that are so-called poor that felt like they had the ability to help people that was doing worse than they were.
No, you know, it's amazing when you sit back and look at the world and the real big corporations you don't see doing much, but the little bitty people that ain't got nothing.
Now they do everything.
Are giving out to everybody. It's like the 501s in this town. I know I'm gonna get bombarded, but you know the big ones get all the money. The little ones that's actually doing the work.
Yeah.
You know.
Now personally,
they hardly survive.
Now personally, I actually seek out the smaller organizations. My experience, what I've learned is that a lot of the smaller organizations, they have a direct connection to people that need help. And they also have a willingness to provide services without wanting any type of compensation. Most of the areas that I do things in is with small churches, small organizations, small synagogues, small masjids, because again, these are the organizations that choose to open their doors without expecting any type of monetary gains. Even the chefs that are preparing the dinners, we have some chefs that work at some high end restaurants that are volunteering their services to cook. Because they feel like they want to be able to help out, not necessarily the company that they're working for, right, but the individual themselves.
Well, just up the street, if you look at that pizza sign up there, that guy was, he's a Muslim, but for the last, 10 years, every time I did an event, he gave me like 100 pizzas free. And, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe in Christian, but to see a Muslim do that just because he saw these people out here, it's beyond me. You know, it's not a religious thing. Well, in a way it is, because every religion says what we should do to help our brothers and sisters. I don't care if the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, even the Egyptian Book of the Dead spoke about how we should take care of our brothers and sisters.
When we talk about the three major religions in America, going off the Christian ideology, they was founded by Abraham, right? They say Abraham's the father of religion. So when you read Genesis, you get two stories, two covenants. You get one for Ishmael, and you get one for Isaac. But see, as more often than not, we don't pay attention to the words that are in those books, because you have all three religions. You have the Jewish religion, you have the Christian religion, you have the Islamic religion. But that goes back to the statement that I made earlier about colonization separating people and causing chaos and confusion, which makes it easy for certain entities to prosper, while the majority of people that have the same motivations, the same goals, hopes and desires, and even fears, now they don't work together. Now they don't communicate with each other.
Okay, again, why don't you give out the dates, times that you're going to be giving away the stuff and everything to the public?
Okay, the charity community dinner, feed the needy, feed the hungry, was at Brush Creek Community Center, November the 26th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's open to the entire community. One of the things that we like to do is have a mixture of those that are homeless, those that are lonely, and those that are doing okay. We still need volunteers to come in. You can volunteer at Voices of the People at sbcglobal.net. December the 11th will be the Winter Wonderland. At December 11th at Brush Creek Community Center, we will be distributing the clothes, whatever canned goods we have left over from the dinner, and children toys. We will be accepting donations all the way up until December the 11th for that event. You can drop your donations off at Brush Creek Community Center at 3801 Brush Creek.
Sounds like
a lot of
plan.
Numbers.
So, I guess I just want to say it's been not fun, but it's been nice having you here. I mean, you know, I haven't done this too much as far as interview people, but I like to get down to their heart and know what makes them tick. And you, I know. Matter of fact, I sent out an email about you. I said you was the only politician in town that I even thought would do a good job.
No, thank you.
Well, you know, I had you there when we did the... Yeah, give your website out again.
The email is voicesofthepeople@sbcglobal.net. And then you can contact Ms. E2 at 651-0044. You can drop off all donations at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Brush Creek, or Cleaver 3801 Cleaver Boulevard, whichever one you're more familiar with, exact same location. Again, the dinner will be November the 26th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's open to the entire community. If you know families that are needy, please give us an email or bring them yourselves to the community center. And then December the 11th will be the Winter Wonderland giveaway. And again, that would be at Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Brush Creek, or 3801 Cleaver Boulevard, whichever one you're more familiar with. Okay. Voices of the People at sbcglobal.net. That's VOICESOVP POPLE at SBCGlobal.net.
You can also do Cop Inc., www.copinc, which is COPPINC. If there's any way you don't get a hold of them and you need to get a hold of them, call me. My phone number is 721-3291. Again, 816-721-3291. And again, the website is www.copinc.com. And we'll get you in touch with Brandon. And watch my site, too, because a lot of times I remember something I forgot, and I put it on the website. So you'll know how to get them clothes to Brandon and everything.
Yeah, and you can also send some to my state address. My state address is brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov. And for the organizations that have events and community events, if you send me an email and in the subject line you put add to newsletter, I have no problem.
How much longer we got?
Well, it looks like we might have just a few more minutes. You want to mention some of the ones that were called in? How about?
Yeah, okay. Again, let me mention the
church that called in.
The right. Church that called in was, a gentleman called in for the church, which was Grace.
Okay.
United Methodist Church. And that was there in Olathe, 520 South Harrison Street.
Yeah, Center of Grace, 5205 Harrison, Olathe, Kansas. They have clothing free for all, community church, and they feed and give out clothes on Wednesdays and Thursdays, except Thanksgiving, they're not going to be open. I wonder why. See, there goes the bug us then. And their phone number is 913-764-1353. Again, 913-764-1353.
Okay. Well, that is going to be what we've got for time today, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here and giving out this information. We appreciate it.
Thank you
very much. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And now the calendar for November 24th, 2014. On Wednesday, November 26th, Voices of the People will be handing out winter materials for Kansas City's poor and homeless. If you have winter clothing to give away, such as coats, hats, gloves, blankets, or hygiene products, you can drop them off at the Brush Creek Community Center at 3801 Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard. The giveaway will begin Monday, November 24th between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Donations will be accepted daily up until the last day on November 26th. The community Thanksgiving dinner will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, November 26th at Brush Creek Community Center. You can share the holiday spirit at the first ever Synergy Run or Walk for Toys on December 6th, 10 a.m. This 5K event will be at the English Landing Park, 8701 Clark Avenue in Parkville, Missouri. There will be T-shirts and prizes. Synergy provides programs including crisis hotlines, emergency shelter, transitional housing, therapeutic services, advocacy, mentoring, and violence prevention programs to assist individuals and families with immediate respite from violence and homelessness. To find out about the registration fee or to register to run or walk, check them out at www.runfortoys.org. The first statewide Missouri Recovery Conference will be held December 8th and 9th at the University of Central Missouri, Elliott Union, Warrensburg, Missouri. This two-day conference is being sponsored by the Department of Mental Health, Division of Behavioral Health, and an alliance of grassroots faith-based community organizations. They are providing recovery support in Missouri. For more information, contact Missouri Recovery Network at www.morecovery.org or call at 573-634-1029. My name is Keith Brown-Eal, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Good morning. This is Liz Henry on with Recovery Talk on Jaws of Justice Radio. And today on the show, I have Stacy Bush. Stacy is 24 years old, and she has 2 years in recovery. And we were just going to talk about her recovery. Thank you, Stacy, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you waking up early this morning. So you are currently a student at UMKC?
Yes, yeah.
What's your major?
I'm a graduate student. I'm getting a master's in music composition.
Okay. And what we were going to do this morning was just, I was going to ask you about your recovery and kind of share your story, what happened, and what's the wording?
What happened?
What it's like. What it's like now.
Yeah.
So go ahead and tell us maybe when you started using and why, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, I think actually before I even started drinking or using any drugs, I definitely had like an alcoholic personality. I was predisposed, I think, at a pretty young age, and I wasn't a person who really drank particularly early, like a lot of people you see in recovery that are 12 and 13, they're starting drinking. I didn't do that. I started smoking a lot of weed. That was my gateway drug, I guess. And then that kind of it stopped working really pretty quickly, and I jumped to alcohol when I was about 20. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I jumped because I was dealing with an undiagnosed bipolar disorder. And that really drove me into, like, alcoholic drinking pretty immediately.
Now, what I just want to – part of my goal with the show is to educate people and empower people regarding recovery and mm-hmm. breaking the stigma.
Yeah.
So one of the things I just wanted to ask you about, maybe have you clarify, is when you say alcoholic personality, what is that? Can you define that for everybody?
I mean, I think it's different for everyone. There's common, I guess, correlations. For me, I was a people pleaser. I didn't have a strong sense of self, and I was whoever someone wanted me to be at that time. I read what they wanted, and then I turned into that person, which naturally leads to a lot of lying, a lot of dishonesty, and like kind of being two-faced, I think, you know, some person in front of someone and then a different person in front of a different person. And I definitely did that before I started drinking, and that kind of manipulation and dishonesty and not feeling connected to people in a true way, I think is definitely kind of lending itself to alcoholism, because that's definitely what alcohol does when I drink, is isolate.
What, now you said you started that weed was your gateway drug.
Yeah.
And when did you start smoking weed?
Also not that young. I was 14 or 15. By the time I graduated from high school, I was, you know, classic stoner, I would say.
And, what... How do you get your weed when you're 14?
Uh-huh.
Well, for one, can you share, Stacy is a transplant, so you moved here, you started using in Michigan?
Yeah.
So how did you start, tell us about where you grew up, your high school, how you mm-hmm. kind of gravitated towards weed, and how at that age you start knowing who deals weed and acquiring the weed, and
right,
you're not necessarily smoking alone. So
yeah,
what does all that look like?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, my perception at this point as a parent is that I think all that still goes on just as it did 10 years ago.
For sure. My experience is, you know, my experience, there's a lot of different ways of going about this, different schools and stuff, but I grew up in a very affluent area, very, very wealthy area that had a lot of money and a lot of kids with parents that didn't pay that much attention, you know. And so for me, weed was extremely accessible, and also pills were heavily, like, just the easiest and most accessible things to get. And I think that's a problem or something that occurs really regularly with kind of white, suburban, wealthy areas. It's very easy to be diagnosed with something. It's easy to get prescriptions and to get them refilled easily. Parents are in powerful positions, you know, in their careers, so there's easier ways of getting things for their children. And I didn't have any of those connections, but I had friends that hooked me up. The other thing, I grew up close to University of Michigan, and that's a very big party school, I guess, and everyone had relatives, you know, older brothers and sisters at U of M, and it was very easy to get those connections going.
So in my day, we went into our parents' liquor cabinets or just right. went to the refrigerator and
yeah.
took whatever, and it wasn't, maybe we watered down the gin or whatever, the whiskey, but it wasn't necessarily noticed. I guess the curiosity for me in talking about this and thinking about teenagers and families and all of this is when somebody has a prescription for something,
right?
Let's say, what kind of pills would you guys do?
You know, Vicodin, morphine, oxycodone.
So these are like pills that parents would be prescribed for a surgery, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah, also, you know, all of your anti-anxiety meds, you know, Xanax, Klonopin, not so much Ativan, but definitely Xanax and Klonopin.
Okay, so my perception, but I've been in recovery for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get prescribed this because you need it.
Right.
But then if pills start missing, don't you notice? Or how does that... I mean, it's different
yeah.
than, like, gin or whiskey, or you water it down. And then,
yeah.
But, like, a pill is missing. You have a certain prescription.
Yeah. You mean, well, I think there's an absence. I mean, it's two things. One, you get prescribed something as needed, you know.
Okay.
So the prescription is not necessarily, oh, take one at bedtime, one, in the, you know, it's
right.
take it when you're feeling anxiety. And that's something I deal with now with my doctors. I have to straight up tell them, you cannot prescribe me something as needed. Like, I need it to be twice a day or at this time or this amount, you know.
Because left to your own devices, you will potentially.
Yeah. I just don't want that option of, mm-hmm. you know, take something whenever you feel this way.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
So that piece of it just fascinates me. And because we were talking earlier, when I was drinking and using, it wasn't, pharmaceuticals weren't big. So now it's just, I'm fascinated in how the whole pharmaceuticals, so it's kind of the as needed that gets. I also know
yeah.
people that come from affluent areas where their parents know doctors.
Right.
And so their parents, because of the friendship, get prescriptions from the doctors
right.
for Xanax or whatever else it is, and then the parents give the medication to the children.
Right.
So it's just interesting that the dynamic.
Yeah. I think it's different everywhere you go. And, you know, we were talking before, I think I'm a little bit older than this kind of new shift in high school drug use, because it's definitely, I think, now, like, very severe. I mean, heroin, I think, is really one of the major drug users in high school now, which is terrifying, because that wasn't really around so much when I was in high school, actually. And I think it's just getting kind of more and more severe, and the high is different, you know. I talk to people in kind of your generation.
I'm in my 40s.
That, you know, say, oh, when I was in college or high school, we went out to have a good time, not to get totally blackout or totally down and depressed. And now I think there's the new culture of how can I get as numb as possible. Like, that is the sought-after high, is like, how do I just totally, you know, zonk out.
Right, it's completely fascinating and shocking for me, just because, and we are definitely getting off on a tangent. We're getting off from your story, but we will get back there. But for my, it was, for my generation, heroin was the end game in my mind, and I've said this before. If you used heroin, that then I was truly a drug addict. Now, I was a drug addict for 10 years, and I didn't use heroin, but in my mind, that made me like a legitimate drug addict. And I never got there, but now I hear people your age, around your age, in the early 20s, that went from weed to heroin.
Yeah.
And then, and also that shift is also fascinating, that going from going out, having a good time, becoming just relaxed and loose, and to just really becoming blacking out, passing out, numbing out. And that, I mean, that's just a whole other conversation of, as a society, why our youth feels the need to become.
Yeah, exactly.
But on your story, so 14 or 15, you start smoking weed, and you do that for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And you're undiagnosed.
Right. So. Yeah, I really ran into problems after I graduated high school. I went to Boston University for a year, actually, after I graduated. And I dropped out because I wasn't studying what I wanted to study. And I came home, ended up in a music school that next fall. And then that's when I really started to have some issues. You know, I started, stopped being able to sleep. I started drinking, like, purely as self-medication. I'm not, my story is not like, oh, I partied all the time and I was a social drinker, and it's completely the opposite. I was only isolated, alone. No one really even knew that I drank at all. And it was just, at first, put me to bed, to shut my brain off. It was always like an off button. And then in bouts of like actual mania, it was just to kind of keep me a little bit, to calm the voices down in my head just enough so that I could still function.
Now, where were your parents in all of this when you're going through this, trying to figure out what's going on with you? Where's your family in this scenario?
Not around. I was at school. I was at a school about 2 hours away from Detroit, and we're not particularly close. And
so you didn't necessarily talk to them about.
I did not talk to them at all until it really, really bottomed out, you know, and then it was a tremendous shock to both of them, and kind of, you know, really hard for them, I think, because they had no idea where any of this was coming from.
Wow. Did you reach out to anybody at school?
Yeah. I had a piano teacher that I studied with really closely. You know, in music school, you have one-on-one, like, these relationships with your professors are really close. And so my piano teacher and I were very, very, very close, and she kind of knew. She also has a husband that is bipolar, and she saw the signs. And but, yeah, I had one of the bottoming out moments I had, I kind of ran into her office and had this panic attack, and she just locked me in her office for a couple hours and called an emergency therapist, and you know, took me to see this therapist, and I was diagnosed bipolar that day.
And then, did you start taking bipolar medication?
Yeah, if I would change anything, that would probably be something I would look back on and change, possibly, because I was diagnosed, and then I was not even sober for like 42 hours. Was that 2 days?
Almost 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't do math.
She's not a math.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't sober at all. And then I was just put on, you know, lithium and more anxiety meds and mood stabilizers. And, you know, it was not good because I couldn't stop drinking. No one really knew if I was an alcoholic or if I was just bipolar and self-medicating at that point.
Okay. And then when was there clarity on that?
About 2 months later, I overdosed on Klonopin and a combination of Klonopin and alcohol, and I had to go into inpatient treatment, which I drank the day after I got out of. And then
how long were you in inpatient?
Just a detox. It was 14 days.
Okay.
I didn't come out thinking that I was an alcoholic. I came out thinking, okay, I know I'm bipolar and I know that I can't drink. So because I know that, I'll just not drink anymore. And that was the big shock because I wound up driving back to school for the next semester and going to the liquor store on the way home. And those next 6 months, I really found out what addiction meant, what like being an alcoholic really meant, because I wound up back in the hospital 6 months later, and in my mind it was more of a drinking issue than the last time, which was kind of a manic depressive mostly issue. That's how I think about it in my mind, at least.
Right.
That was when I really was like, I truly have no power over alcohol. I cannot stop drinking.
Right. So when you got out of the hospital, you're thinking, I can stop drinking, but then your brain kept telling you to get alcohol.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. There was no explanation for it at all. You know, there's no sanity. There's no realistic, you know, rational explanation. I couldn't.
And how old were you at that point?
I got sober about a month after I turned 22.
Okay, so your addiction lasted for maybe 2 years?
If you're just talking about drinking, yeah, it was about 2 hard years of drinking.
And then the weed was maybe 5-6 years of self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't necessarily, maybe you had a dependence on it.
Yeah. Yeah, for me it's really the combination, of having a bipolar diagnosis and alcoholism. And I'm also a pretty straight and narrow alcoholic. I didn't really mess around with anything else.
You're pretty fortunate in that your addiction didn't last that long.
I'm fortunate that it got really, really bad really, really fast. That's what I think, because bottoming at a young age, I think, is really kind of valuable, because I have no desire at all. Like I can't imagine going back out and having something worse happen. I know that would happen if I were to go back out, but I can't even imagine that happening because it was so.
What was your bottom? What is that? Describe your bottom.
That's hard to talk about, I guess. I remember the last time I drank and I was lying on my bed and I couldn't sleep. I hadn't taken my meds in a long time. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't shut my eyes. I couldn't move. And I just remember feeling like I'm in the biggest straitjacket of my life. Like I couldn't get out of this. Every minute, every second felt like an eternity, and I was, having a panic attack, but also I couldn't move, I couldn't think, I couldn't do anything. At that point, drinking actually didn't do anything for me anymore. I couldn't get drunk anymore. I couldn't get that high, and so I was just totally paralyzed and stuck in this time, and, And then coming down from it a couple hours later, I thought I was going to die detoxing off of that binge. Like, I really didn't know if I was going to wake up. I didn't know if I wanted to wake up. And
who helped you out of that? Did anyone help you out of that? Or how did you?
I went into outpatient. But no one really. It was like I detoxed not in the hospital for 3 days after that, and it was really pretty severe because I was physically dependent on alcohol, and I was really pretty deep down there. So I just, I don't know. I went into outpatient, and then I got a sponsor pretty immediately.
So what does your life look like now?
Fantastic. I mean, I'm happy to be here. I just moved to Kansas City in August. I love what I do. I'm really passionate about what I do, and I'm very grateful now coming out of, you know, my addiction and having a sober lifestyle that I can really focus and I can actually be the person that I want to be, you know. And I think as an artist, it also makes me have kind of a unique perspective because I'm really interested in saying something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely changed my life.
Okay. I thank you for coming here and sharing your story. I think it takes a lot of courage to put it out there and to talk about some of the darkest times. What do you think, in your experience, how long have you been in Kansas City now?
About 3 months.
And what do you think about recovery in Kansas City, young people's recovery in Kansas City? I look at when I was your age, I was not able to stop drinking that young because I couldn't imagine giving up my friendships. I didn't know what that would look like. Right. So what does that look like for you? Do you surround yourself with people who are your age in recovery? Are there a lot?
There are definitely the ones you need. You can find the people that you need here in your life. And I don't entirely surround myself with just sober people, but those are the closest people in my life for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you have that common, you can share, you have that core connection, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think Kansas City could do to support young people in recovery?
Just release the negative stigma of being an addict or an alcoholic, you know, and just be and have more knowledge about the disease and what it does and how we can save lives.
Talking about it.
Yeah.
Instead of acting like it's something to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening to Recovery Talk on KKFI.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following was recorded last week at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. They were having a conversation about whether Texas is ready for medical marijuana. The introduction comes from the head of the drug forum of the Baker Institute, Professor William Martin.
Vincent Lopez is rapidly becoming a legendary figure in the movement to allow those who need it to have legal access to cannabis. As your program notes, Vincent has dealt with muscular dystrophy for most of his life. Cannabis has not cured him, but regular use has made his life better, as he will tell you. Last year, he founded the Patient Alliance for Cannabis Therapeutics to provide a safe place for medical cannabis patients to share their experiences. Vincent is a writer, a publisher, a tireless advocate, and to many, a true hero.
The question comes down to is Texas ready for medical marijuana? As Texans, I believe we've been ready for quite some time. We would have passed years ago, but with no open ballot initiative, we are bound to a different set of legislative processes. But we know who we need to educate, who we need to be talking to, and the conversation that needs to be happening. We know the voice of patients, and we shall be silent no more. It's hard not to turn away from the fact that one day my own physical mobility will cease to exist and that I will not be able to self-medicate. This in turn would fall onto my caregiver, which happens to be my mother. Therefore, she needs to have protection, and I fight to see that she has it. It's never good living in fear, for fear is a sickness that can keep us from facing reality, that can inhibit us from looking beyond ourselves, that can blind us of our own true courage. In stepping out of the cannabis closet, I had always been familiar with the feelings of fear and intimidation, but nothing compared to the weight I was carrying by not coming out by not saying anything, by living life in secret. No longer could I live in silence knowing I had an answer in cannabis for the painful muscle spasms, the stiffness and contortion I endure, the loss of appetite and sleep. If there's an answer in cannabis, then I shall not stay silent. This is my body, and how I choose to alleviate the pains of my body is solely up to me.
Again, that was Mr. Vincent Lopez, who suffers from MS, speaking at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University. Is Texas ready for medical marijuana? Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, KKFI.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta musical.